We got 2 hours or what?
What?
4 hours?
Annie, yes.
About 5 to 9. 1 hour. Attention, commission will come to order. Members, the meeting today and the meeting on Friday is to basically clear off things that should be pretty straightforward, not too controversial. If there are significant issues with any of these items, we'll just set them aside. Was there anything, did anybody want to talk about the principles or anything at this point? Or Senator Larson?
Just to outline where we are about deadlines and so forth, how soon do we have to have these bills into the committees?
Senator Betzel, remind us what our committee deadline is.
Mr. Chair, this House and Senate adopted a change to joint rules that gives this commission until the second committee deadline, that's April 12th, to have the bill out of the policy committees, which means, of course, and the commission has to finish its work in advance, sufficient time prior to that date of April 12th, in order to get it through the policy committees.
And apparently the House is scheduled April 11th in GovOps. Representative Smith?
I think that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, so as we go through these bills, a lot of them are non-controversial. Are we going to move those separately, say under the consent calendar, or are you going to have one big bill?
I don't think we'd put it on the consent calendar, but you know, it's kind of up to the commission.
Yeah. Well, I just think
I'm an agnostic.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that, you know, we're going to have a number of controversial bills, and in the past we've lost a lot of local bills because they've been part of the big bill, and if that gets vetoed, then we have to wait a while to get the bills passed. So I would hope that we could move the non-controversial bills out of here, and then so they can move along.
Well, that ultimately is a decision of the committees of the House and the Senate.
Sure, yeah. But they'll go on our recommendation, of course.
Perhaps.
Sometimes.
Of course. Of course.
They better.
Absolutely.
That's what we're for, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay, we've got items 1 through 13 are all staff recommendations for various cleanup or other issues related to the funds. The funds have been reviewing those bills. If you look at the handouts from the staff, you'll notice that there's a slight addition to the way these memos are presented. On the front page, there's kind of a more summarized version of what the issues are. And I've asked staff to point out anything in particular that we should really pay attention to as a policy matter. This should allow us, it's not my intent to read through the memos in front of the commission, but we'll obviously take whatever time's necessary on an idea to make sure it's covered. And so the way I was planning on handling 1 through 13 was to basically by default ask the various funds if they had issues with those bills. And so why don't we're considering 1 through 13 right now, and members can look at the various handouts to find out if there's anything of particular interest. Can we hear from the various funds on those items? Why don't we just go down the line and either tell us you've reviewed all the provisions related to your funds and they're fine, or there's some that you'd like us to further consider. Any of the directors want to step up? Is anybody awake yet?
Mr. Chair, no.
But you get them all seated up there.
Mr. Chair, why don't you just start going? I can make motions, or we can make motions.
Let's see what they say first.
Okay.
Because they've reviewed them all.
Sure.
They've reviewed them all.
Why don't you get all three of the funds up there, and then we can just nail them right as we go through.
Ms. Vanek?
Huh?
Yeah. Why don't you, the three funds get up, the major funds? Ms. Vanek, you had a chance to review these?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, we reviewed the bills. One in particular of interest to us is Senate File 430 on the administrative expenses. And it's not so much so what's listed in there, but there is a requirement to list investment-related expenses in that section. And on the GASB requirements, that is not the appropriate place where it's to be put in the financial report. So that's got to be addressed. But there's also other language in that section of law that has for some time been out of compliance with the governmental reporting standards for financial reporting. And our finance staff is really to work with commission staff to clean up that language so that we can move forward and have an accurate reflection of what's required by the governmental standards board.
Okay, so that's number four.
That's number four.
Other ones that relate to ERA, are they okay?
I've reviewed the other ones, Mr. Chair, that relate to PERA, and I have concerns from PERA's perspective, but other folks may have.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Manick.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Bergstrom, the Director of the State Retirement System. I do share Ms. Vanek's, we have some minor concerns with Senate File 430. I do not have a problem with the bill number one and number two. Item number seven, the bill itself and one of the amendments is fine. I would, if someone is going to offer Amendment 184, would like to speak against that amendment.
Okay, on seven? Okay.
On item number seven. Also on Senate File 439, I have just a slight correction that we could do at some point down the line, and also would like, if the amendments are considered, would like to discuss some of those because I think some of those are clearly policy changes.
Okay.
But the most of the bill itself, the other one is just a minor technical change I can work with Mr. Martin on at a later point to clear up.
Okay, great.
Good morning, Chairman. My name is Luther Thompson from TRA. TRA doesn't have any issues with the first 13. As PERA suggested on item 4, we do think that if the staff could work, if our staff or our members could work with your staff, there are some things that could probably be updated there in the dealing with the financial reports.
Okay. Great. Any of these others? First class city teachers, number 11.
Mr. Chair,
yep.
If I may, I guess I'm not awake yet.
Okay.
Senate File 429 with respect to collecting omitted contributions or payments to PERA charter schools. There seems to be an amendment that would broaden that to take into account any governmental entity that isn't funded directly from the proceeds of property taxes. And I'm not sure how that broadening would allow us to collect from entities that don't necessarily get aid, because the idea is to go to the Department of Finance and have collections that we need offset against aids that other entities would receive. There are labor organizations that would get that kind of aid.
Okay.
We don't have an issue with collecting from those kind of entities at this point in time. Our bigger issue is the charter schools. Now, the school districts also, while we generally don't have a problem, there have been isolated incidents where it's taken some time to get the money that is owed to PERA through penalties we apply for late reporting, and we can't assess those to the county against property taxes. So our main concern here is charter schools and all school districts.
Okay. Great. First class city teachers on number 11. Who else do we have to ask? Oh, on number 5, 6, and 11.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Karen Hill, Director of the Teachers Retirement Fund. Some of my colleagues will comment on some of the other bills, but I would like to comment on Senate File 437, the updating of the Articles of Incorporation. The reason that we are opposed to that is the fact that there are so few of our old plan members left. In the case of Minneapolis, we have left less than 200 people currently that are active, and that number will go down by another 70 or 80 people this year, and it just doesn't make any sense to be republishing Articles of Incorporation,
okay,
people who aren't there.
Okay. The other two, you don't? Okay. How about the other two?
Mr. Chairman, members, Phil Kapler, St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. I would echo the comments of Ms. Gilbert from Minneapolis teachers. And in addition, I mean, if you're interested in sort of paring down the agenda to issues or items that are kind of urgent business or really need to be taken care of this year, I would recommend that for a number of reasons that items number 4, 5, 6, 9, and 11 be moved to interim discussion and review, just because, I mean, the staff has done an enormous amount of work and a lot of research on these particular items. I don't know that we've had sufficient time to digest that, quite frankly. I think there are a number of issues that arise in our minds when we talk through these bills, and some of the proposals certainly have merit. Others, we're not exactly sure of the effect in all cases, and because they're important items and important issues to be addressed, I don't think any of those items are urgent business, and we would appreciate the opportunity to work with staff in the interim to formulate perhaps more articulated reviews and have more of an opportunity to provide constructive input.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Jay Stoffel from Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund. And I would agree with my colleagues, and I would add number 12 and 13. 12, just items on your list, items number 12 and 13. We have a couple of other minor amendments that we would like to propose to go along with those bills. But otherwise, the concerns expressed earlier, and what I would express earlier are I agree with those comments.
Okay, thanks. Sir Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kaplan, would you give us those numbers again, 4, 5?
6, 4, 5, 6, 9, 11. And Mr. Stoffel has added 12 and 13, perhaps.
Okay, anybody, thank you very much. Anybody else want to make any points at this point? Then, members, we're going to go through these one at a time then and see how many we can clear out of here.
2, 3, 4, 5.
Good morning. It's just one small point on 439. And the issue is that it puts an 8.5% interest rate into MRF for repayment of refunds. Currently, our law is 6%. But if you have a partial refund that you repay, then it's 8.5% because it's a different statute. So I think there's two alternatives that I've identified for the commission. The first was to put current law in if this is meant to just be a technical bill. And so instead of 8.5% on that line, you'd plug in 6. I do think, however, it might be good policy, to the extent you would be willing to put policy into this bill, to actually have the 8.5%, and I'll give you a reason why, and just give us a small window like what occurred at the big plans when they moved from 6 to 8.5. What happens is people start at their career in the city of Minneapolis young, and some were there for 2 or 3 years. They take a refund, and because we're a closed fund, if they move back to the city or another employer, they wait until right before they retire to repay their MRF service. Their raises, of course, have been substantial, and the typical cost to the employer, which actually hits them immediately at MRF, can be anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000 to $40,000 per person for 1 or 2 years of service. Had they been buying that service from any fund but MRF, they would have paid 8.5%. And these buybacks cover 25-30 years of accrued interest. Not being a math whiz, I haven't attempted to figure the difference, but I do know that in almost every refund I've seen in 8 years, the city of Minneapolis gets hit for about 90% of the cost of that service. Moving to 8.5, I think, does make sense because the other plans charge 8.5. However, if that violates a policy, since our assumed rate on the active fund is 6, I don't want to violate any pension commission policies. Because we're in the last years of our fund, we have 400 active workers remaining, and 100% of our employees are eligible to retire by 2007. And you can now, because of federal law, use deferred comp money to buy these years of service. We've gone from 2 or 3 buybacks a year to 12 to 15. all of which because the city already has some financial difficulties with their MRF contributions, they must pay us immediately. So if this is a pure technical bill, perhaps it could be considered in another bill. Or what I'm suggesting is that perhaps we could just put the window that we had on, which I believe was 6 months, and we would live with the 8.5%. I have asked the city today to look at it. I don't anticipate that they would be opposed, but I would also point that out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, anybody else? Okay, Senator Bedsall moves Senate File 427 be incorporated in an omnibus bill.
Yes.
No amendments. Anybody in the audience want to testify?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if they were non-controversial,
we're certainly going to have at least a bill with a lot of things in it. We're not going to send every bill by itself.
No, I know that, but I mean, I just wanted the non-controversial bills to move ahead rather than being a possible veto.
We'll avoid vetoes. Senator Larson, we're going to avoid 15 vehicles out on the House and Senate floors.
You know, okay.
We've got to be realistic here. Senate file, so 427, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Representative Smith moves Senate, House File 2091. No amendments. Anybody want to testify? Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion adopted. Is the charter school portion something that can be fixed right here, Ms. Vanek, or do you need some time to talk with the staff about it? Is the charter school issues on Senate File 429 something we can fix right now, or do we need some time to talk with the staff about it?
If we could just spend a little time with staff.
Okay. Okay, we'll do that on that one then. 430 we'll set aside. Sounds like all the funds want to chat with the staff a little bit on that one. Number 5 and number 6 and number 9... we'd like to process those this year. So the funds, can you spend some time looking at those? St. Paul? And if we run into a major brick wall there, we can slow it down, but want you to spend some time looking at it. Chat with the staff about it, about those. Okay, Senate File 433. Would it help if the ones we just set aside, they put back in their packet? You know, you might save trees on the ones we're setting aside here, number 3, number 4, number 5, and number 6. You just put it back in your packet. So you'll pull it out?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
433.
There's an amendment that we need to do there.
433, where are we here? Number 7. Okay, the number 51 amendment, is that the one someone wanted to testify on?
No, Mr. Chair, Mr. opposed 184.
Okay, so the 051, anybody, Senator Bedsall moves the 051. Okay, any discussion? All in favor say aye. All opposed,
aye.
Motion adopted. Okay, the 184.
184 is not... is a substantive change and doesn't
whatever
need
to be
done. Members, if I can explain what 184 is, there's the purpose of this bill is to clean up the judge's plan. There's a pre-1993 additional employer contribution. It basically doesn't work right now because it is time sensitive. It is pre-1993. The bill would continue it and make it a current provision. So if the judge's plan ever ran out of money, the state general fund would then make sure judges' pensions get paid, what it did in 1993. If you don't want to have that continue on as a fail-safe contribution, 184 just does away with the entire provision. So it's the alternative way to resolve the issue of an old provision, either update it, which is what the bill does, or kill it. And 184, I would kill it. Mr. Bergstrom suggested he was not interested in 184. So you don't need to do it. The bill addresses the issue by updating the provision.
Mr. Chairman.
One second.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Dave Bergstrom, the director of the State Retirement System, and it is very unlikely we would ever need that fail-safe contribution. The plan is about 76% funded. However, in a political world, it's just nice to have it there that if for some reason they stop funding that plan, we have a fail-safe method to go back to the state general fund. Certainly not going to throw myself on a sword over it, but this plan did not start getting funded until 1991 is when they started pre-funding the program. It's at about 76% funded. If something were to happen, it wouldn't take long where we only had enough assets to cover current retirees, so I just like to keep it in as a fail-safe. It doesn't hurt anything.
You know, it's the legislature. We should say when the legislature.
Yes.
I always kind of get lost when someone says they. Where is she? She was just standing there. On the judge's plan?
Sandy.
Yeah. Ms. Nairn, did you want to make a comment?
Mr. Chair, Sandy Nairn on behalf of the Minnesota District Judges Association. Mr. Martin was kind enough to share the recodification bill with us early in session. A number of us have reviewed it and requested a number of changes, and all of those are incorporated in the 051 amendment, so we're fine with what he's drafted.
So you would prefer to leave it the way it is with the fail-safe in there rather than to, okay.
Thank you.
Seems to me we ought to leave the fail-safe in there.
Absolutely.
Okay, so then we don't need any other amendments here. Any further discussion? Senator Larson moves Senate File 433 as amended be incorporated. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. 7-8. Ms. Murphy moves 434. Anybody want to testify on that? Senate File 434, House File 213. Okay, on the Murphy motion to incorporate as is, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion adopted. There, nine is going to, staff's going to talk to the funds about that. Omitted salary deductions provisions update. So that's why did the first class cities, do the statewide funds care about that one too?
I don't know, not that they indicated.
And number nine, the first class cities are concerned or not quite sure. Okay, the state funds seem to be okay with it. You want some time to think about it? Okay. Number 10. Shell moves number 10, salary definition, Senate File 436, 2115, House. Anybody want to testify on number 10? On the Michelle motion to incorporate, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. The articles of incorporation. Want first class cities, talk a little bit with the fund about that, with the staff, I mean, about that. And 12 and 13, I guess we're going to talk with the staff about. Okay. We'd like to try to process some of these. It seems like the question of number 11 is the funds don't think we should do it at all. But the other ones, it seems like there's things in there to resolve. So, okay, then we have a series of 14, 15, 16, and 17 that are privatizations into PERA. They're moving into PERA. And why don't staff just give us a general history on these? And Ed, Mr. Burke, on just the whole notion of these. And these are relatively boilerplate now, although PERA is going to bring up a point that they think we need to consider. Mr. Burke.
Members, several years ago, the legislature developed a procedure for handling privatizations. A privatization is a situation where an organization was previously a public organization with its members covered by either parageneral or MSRS general, depending on whether the individuals were local or state employees. When an organization like that changes ownership and becomes a private organization, there's this question about what to do with the retirement coverage of the individuals now that they're working for a private organization rather than a public organization. The procedure that the commission came up with several years ago and has generally used since, although there have been some exceptions, is to provide the individuals with some benefits above and beyond what a typical terminated employee would receive. When an individual decides to leave public employment due to their own decision, presumably that is a decision by the individual. The individual has considered the implications of doing it. But when a privatization occurs, the individual is now an employee of a private organization, not due to any act of free will on the part of that individual, but due to an action on the part of the employer. So because this situation has been imposed on the employees, the commission and legislature decided to provide certain benefits to these individuals, which are above and beyond what a typical terminated employee receives. Those benefits are to allow individuals to use their time with the private employer to qualify for the Rule of 90, although the time with that employer would not actually be used in computing the benefit under the Rule of 90. The other considerable enhancement is an increase in the deferred annuities augmentation. When individuals leave public employment, and if they do not elect to receive an annuity immediately, either because they do not want to or because it's they're too young to start drawing that annuity, individuals receive deferred annuities augmentation, which essentially means that the benefits computed as of the time that they leave, but then it increases by a certain percentage over time. And right now in law, those percentages are that the annuity will increase by 3% until age 55 and by 5% per year thereafter. Now, with privatized employees, these individuals receive deferred annuities augmentation that is more generous than that. I believe the rates are 5% up per year up to age 55 and 7.5% thereafter. With this treatment, then, of privatizations, and I should add that in order to receive this treatment, there has to be a bill that is enacted which would place this privatized organization in the either the para-privatized employee chapter, which would be 353F, or the MSRS privatized employee chapter, which would be 352F. And if the bill is enacted, which places the privatized employees in that chapter, then they receive these enhanced benefits. Now, some of the issues with this is that in providing those enhanced benefits, PARA does not receive as much of an actuarial gain as would otherwise be the case. Now, in the past, that seemed like a very reasonable policy, but there is reason at this point in time to perhaps reconsider the use of the typical privatization model. And the reason is that during this session, PARA has had a bill introduced which would increase the contribution rates to PARA General. The reason that PARA is pursuing that is because PARA General has a funding problem. So to the extent that PARA General has a funding problem, there is some reason to at least rethink the issue of whether to continue to allow privatizations under this particular model, because it creates some harm to PARA compared to the situation where privatization is not used. With those comments, I believe the commission will be ready to consider these four bills here. The first one on the list, Mr. Chairman, you just want to go in order here?
Yep.
Okay, the first one on the list is number 14, Senate File 888, Senator Kubley, House File 704. Now, this particular one is
a case where language was enacted last year. This is for the Red Villa Nursing Home privatization. And the reason the issue is before you again is that on these bills there's a local approval clause. And with a local approval clause, the language is not operable or is voided if local approval is not provided before the first day of the legislative session, the next legislative session. Now, in this particular case, the privatization, at least the initial privatization, fell through, so there was some delay. As a result, the privatization did not occur, and local approval was not given. Our understanding at this time is that this issue, this organization, Red Villa, may well be privatized again. There's a renewed interest in this. In fact, the privatization may have occurred already. And as a result, there's a bill before you, Senate File 888, which would extend the filing date so that local approval could be given to this privatization.
Someone here from Red Villa? Representative, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
What's going on down there? Is there local support for this now, or is the?
Yes, the deal they were working on last year fell through because they weren't going to get paid what they thought the facility was worth, and they kept working on it and accepted other or considered other offers, and they got an offer now that they've agreed on, and it's going to take a little time, but sometime during the summer the deal should be completed.
Okay. Ms. Vanek, is this one the board has reviewed?
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek, PERA director. This is one of the entities for which the actuarial work has already been completed. And based on the past practice of how that valuation is undertaken, the board has approved this privatization because the numbers have shown that the cost of the enhanced benefits is covered by the gain. And that is based upon the way that it's always been prepared.
So this is not one that you might have a concern with the funding ratio?
Well,
you want to bring up that point now?
Mr. Chair, I didn't specifically ask our actuary about this one. I was unable to reach Siegel to talk to the actuary who actually prepared the numbers. So this one I didn't have numbers prepared on. Northfield I did. And based upon the information I received from our actuary and our current funded ratio, it doesn't appear that if you use our funded ratio that the enhanced benefits can be paid for by the gain, because we're assuming it's fully funded, and if you use our funded ratio, the cost isn't fully funded, and it would not extend the benefits to the members, because it says the gain has to cover the cost. It doesn't in Northfield's case. In rough numbers on this one, it wouldn't cover it either.
Okay.
But that's based upon concerns we're raising that I tried to get my arms around the last couple of years and now realize specifically what the point is. But other groups have been allowed to privatize under this arrangement, so we're a little bit conflicted about how to fix this issue going forward when you have four privatizations in play right now. And Red Villa particularly, because they had an opportunity to privatize last year before we figured out what was going on. And due to decisions at the city level, it didn't get done. So,
What's the long-term exposure? How many more of these are coming in?
Well, Hutchinson Care Center is in the mix, but they haven't specifically stated to us. In our conversations with them, it's unclear to us whether or not they're going to move toward privatization. Northfield is ready to go.
It's been going that way for several years.
Bridges Medical in Ada is ready to go. The actuarial work is underway currently. And there's always the potential for some large entities. Hennepin County Medical Center at this point isn't, but we don't know what's coming down the road. Rice Memorial in Wilmer is another large hospital that could be a potential at some point in the future. There have been no indications at this point in time that they're considering privatization, but what if they do? Those would be huge hits to the fund.
Does anybody know what the universe is out there? How many?
A lot of them. 100?
200?
Yeah.
What are the options if we were to fix this now? What does that mean for the numbers? Give us a little more clarification of what this means. This is an issue of whether the fund is held whole as you bring these folks in, right?
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, when this model was drafted for the University of Minnesota Hospital Employees merger with Fairview, how they arrived at these 5.5 and 7.5 augmentation was the actuary backed into that number based upon MSRS's funded ratio at the time, which was about 91%. And I just finally learned that's how they arrived at these numbers within the last couple of weeks. So they basically said, based upon our 91% funded ratio, we can afford for MSRS to extend this type of augmentation feature to these individuals. That then model was drafted and put into PERA without an assessment of whether or not our funded ratio could support that kind of enhanced augmentation. When it was first done in 1999, we were 90% funded. So we were close to the same level as MSRS, so it didn't appear to be a significant issue. But our funded ratio has now dropped to 77% actuarially funded. So the solution to this, I believe, would be for the actuaries to go back and back using our funded ratio back into what level of enhanced augmentation could you provide above the 3% and 5% in current law, but not take it as far as 5.5% and 7.5% because we're not at 90% funded anymore. And I do apologize to the authors because this is just kind of all, I finally got it gelled within the last week or so, and talked to Senator Pogamiller yesterday about my concerns. So
I think if we look at number 17, the Northfield example, back in
just before amendments,
after the bill, or after the explanation of the bill, there's a document from Segal, S-E-G-A-L, about two-thirds way back, and the second page with a chart that looks like this. You want to, Larry or Mr. Martin?
Members, this is one example in our packets of the actuarial work that's received on a typical privatization. And you have three numbers presented on page two of this letter from Segal. It's about four pages from the end of the document. It gives you the liability for the, in this case, the 360 Northfield members. If they were to continue in PERA coverage, about $16.3 million. What PERA's liability would be to those same folks if they simply terminated, if this hospital became private and they were no longer plan members, $10.7 million. So you've got the difference between 16.3 and 10.7 is the gain that PERA would incur by virtue of these folks forcibly being taken out of PERA coverage. And then the third number is the number of PERA's liability if they were covered by this enhanced set of benefits as privatized employees, about $15.2 million. So there is a slight gain to PERA. The difference between the 16.3 and the 10.7 being five and a fraction million, and the difference between the 15.2 and the 10.73 being four and a fraction, there's still some gain to PERA in the way we have assessed these. And if that's the case, then these privatizations in the past have been permitted to proceed. And that's the sort of numbers that have to be generated. Is the net gain to is there still a net gain to PERA by the termination? And Ms. Vanek has indicated she would like to say something.
Mr. Chair, our consulting actuary told me yesterday that based on our market value funded ratio of 74%, the actual amount of money available to cover this is more like $12.1 million or $12.2 million. So the cost of the privatized...
That's number three. So
that, would be the number one. That's the funded level.
Okay.
So the cost of the enhanced benefits under privatization are about $3.1 million more than what our ongoing costs would be. She has indicated that currently funded, we're about at the market value funded ratio, and I didn't have a chance to talk to her on the phone, so I apologize. I don't know why she used market value rather than actuarial of 77. But she told me at 74%, there are about $12.1 million funded, and the cost of the benefits, the enhanced benefits, is about $15.2, which leaves $3.1 million to be absorbed by the remaining members of the fund if these enhanced benefits were extended. We would still have a gain if we didn't do anything for them and they just terminated because of the 12.1 versus 10.7. But the enhanced benefits under 353F create a cost to the fund given our current funded ratio.
Okay, we need to ponder that.
I don't know.
Anybody here from... Represent
the 12.1, thank you, Mr. Chair, is just 70% off the $16 million. Is that how they get to that number?
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, I believe that's how she got to the number. She may have calculated something different. As I said, I was doing this after hours, and she just emailed me quickly, and we didn't have a chance to discuss it thoroughly. But I did share my concerns with Siegel's consulting actuary in a phone conversation last week and asked her that when she comes to address the commission that perhaps we could sit down and talk to staff about it.
Okay. Anybody here from the Hutchinson group?
It's not fair.
Mr. Chairman, members, we have three people here from the Hutchinson Hospital.
Mary, would you talk with Larry a second? Go ahead,
okay.
Senator.
To my left is Representative Newman. To my right is Mr. Mark Sabora, who is the city attorney. I also have the hospital administrator, Phil Graves, here, and the human services person, Linda Ziemer, to help answer questions. And the situation is that the Hutchinson Area Healthcare, which is owned by the city, employs approximately 600 people that are in PERA right now, includes a nursing home and another medical center in Dassel, considering privatization. Of course, when they privatize, all the employees that are currently in PERA would be nice if they could continue on in that same retirement program. So the bill, as I introduced it, Senate File 1091, simply adds the Hutchinson Area Health Care to a list of names, of which there are already eight on the list in current law, that allows them to access this continued PERA benefit. So that's what the request is to do that.
Okay, and you've got some amendments on this one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there are three amendments there. The first one is the 05088 amendment. I don't believe you need that one at this time because I don't believe any actual work has been done. So forget the 08 amendment. The 089 amendment is a technical amendment which should be offered if the bill is to proceed, which simply indicates that the actuarial calculations would be performed by the actually retained by the pension fund administrators rather than the commission actuary. This was drafted using an old model, and the commission no longer has an actuary. Senator Betzel moves.
Senator Betzel moves the 089 amendment. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Okay.
The 090 amendment is a delete all amendment, which could be used if the commission wished to leave these individuals in Era General. The reason I drafted this amendment is simply because at the current time, or at least when I was working on this bill, this privatization was just in the very early stages, and no one had a clear sense of how the organization might want to go. So if they were interested in the model of staying in PERA, I drafted the 09 amendment.
I'll move that amendment.
I don't know if they're interested in that. What is the preference?
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't quite hear everything that was said, but I'm going to ask the county attorney here to comment, or the city attorney. But
yeah, I think the preference of Hutchinson Area Healthcare would be the ability to stay in PERA.
Do want to stay in PERA?
What?
They do want.
They do want to stay.
Mr. Chairman, you may want to ask if they understand the difference between staying in PERA General and being in the PERA privatization chapter.
Is there a clear understanding of the difference in staying in PERA General and going to the privatization chapter?
Oh, I apologize. I had difficulty hearing because of the noise out in the hallway. Right. The organization's preference would be able to be included in the privatization chapter, as the other health care organizations have been.
We don't want the last amendment. They want to be in the privatization, not in PERA General. Okay. Anything else to add locally? We have to consider this issue that PERA has raised. So.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. How about Ada? Senator Scoy?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Eakin and I are here representing Ada. The gentleman from Bridges Medical Services was unable to make it down to St. Paul this morning.
He showed good judgment. It's a long drive.
It certainly is, Mr. Chair. Bridges Medical Services is in a similar situation as the previous facility. They are currently owned by the city. They are a hospital and a nursing home. They employ about 120 employees in Ada and the surrounding area. Their proposal is to, or they're working on an agreement where they would be leased by the Benedictines to take over the nursing home and the hospital. They would like the same treatment as the other facilities that have been discussed and that have been in current law. There is one little anomaly in that this has been done previously. I think Renvilla did it last year in one other facility. The transfer is expected to take place on March 1st of this year, so there would be some small amount of retroactivity required if this were to move forward.
Okay, do we need to amend it?
Mr. Chairman, there's no amendments prepared. I don't think there's any need to amend it. The bill itself on page 2, lines 10 through 12 deal with this retroactive issue. It's fairly common to have that language. It has appeared in several past privatizations. It's trying to make sure that there's no gap between the date that the privatization occurs and the effective date.
Right. So it's covered. The language covers that issue.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. members.
And then Northfield. Anybody from Northfield? Okay, we've got the...
He was here.
He was, just
he was here.
Oh, okay. Out in the hallway, somebody?
Yeah, can someone check and see us?
Why don't you talk about the amendment, sir?
Or Northfield?
Right.
Mr. Chairman, on Northfield, we do have the actuarial work that was what the commission was looking at about 5 minutes ago as an example. Well, I have to say at this point I'm not quite sure what to do on this, in that what the 067 amendment does is it removes the language from the effective date provision, which requires the that there be actuarial work prepared and that the actuarial work find that there is a gain to PARA. Typically, the commission has taken that approach when it has been presented with that information, so it's known up front at the time that the bill passes. The reason I'm uncertain what to do is that it has become apparent at this meeting that there's some disagreement or some question about exactly what is shown by that actuarial work, with this recognition that the funding ratio perhaps needs to be taken into account. So perhaps the safest thing to do is to not use the 067 amendment. This way that language stays in the bill and it's still in play.
But do 68?
Yes, you would need 68.
Senator Bedsole moves 068. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion adopted. Senator Neville, any comments from the...
I'm going to let these folks comment. Frankly, I'm just trying to track this.
Okay.
So we've had some discussions on this end of the table wondering if one possible solution would be to just allow these employees to stay in PARA. Is that an option?
In the privatization,
yes,
statute, right? Or to stay in PERA general is what this group wants?
Well, I'm just asking the question: is that a possibility that even if they privatize, they could stay in PERA?
We have done that, yes.
Not if it's going to cost.
I'm not sure I'm tracking everything correctly, but if there's some debate on these augmentation levels, and that would that jeopardize or put into question the actuarial numbers that have already been done?
Mr. Chairman, the actuarial work that has been done really simply wouldn't be relevant because these individuals would remain in PARA. Some implications of doing that, though, is that if these individuals remain in PARA as active employees, the employees continue to make contributions to PARA, and the employers would have to make contributions to PARA. Now, an issue that almost always comes up in these privatizations is that one of the reasons for privatizing is to try to save costs. And quite often the purchaser of the facility does not want to remain in the private plan because it does not want the expense and some claim the uncertainty regarding future contributions that one has when one stays in that private plan. So it can hamper efforts to privatize if you were to take that approach, because then the private employee would be required to meet those obligations.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, Ken Bank, who's the current hospital administrator, and Sue White, the Northfield city administrator, here. Do you have any comments?
No questions. Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I think we're caught a little off guard that we thought that the actuarial study that had been done suggested that there was not a problem with us having liabilities that could we had an account that could fund the potential liabilities even under augmentation. It had been our plan that the second phase of this actuarial study that is currently underway is to do an employee-by-employee evaluation of exactly how our employees would end up in terms of this change-out from partial PARA, our ability to access PARA in a partial way, and also to have a replacement retirement plan. So we would know those employees that might not be kept whole in this process, and then we were going to deal with that. We haven't had a chance to really look at whether or not staying in PARA solves the problem that was raised today about the augmentation and the liabilities perhaps exceeding the fund balance that we have now. We had intended that we would have a replacement retirement plan that would entail an employer contribution. So we're not certainly out of the ballpark in terms of considering continuing with PARA with an employer and employee match. But I guess we don't know enough about that option, but we certainly think that if that solves the actuarial problem and allows the privatization to move forward, we would certainly consider requesting that, or to be treated as the others have in the past with augmentation.
Chair Pokelmer, and we came here hoping that we could be considered the same way other entities have been considered when they have privatized and add our name as one of eight, along with, I guess, making the same request. And that was our preference. I think what the privatization of the hospital, one of the intents is so it can be competitive, doesn't have some of the constraints that we sometimes find publicly owned institutions have. So that's where I think the idea of staying in PARA is a possibility, but needs to be evaluated both in the short term and the long term. Otherwise, our preference would really to be included using the table and the numbers that you see before you and be treated as privatization models have been handled.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, I think on these four, Ms. Vanek, something you want to add? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members, this is exactly why I didn't necessarily want to raise this at this point in time till I had all the solid answers with respect to this issue. So if you would indulge me, I will get on the phone with Siegel's actuary and our own actuary and try to get Mr. Martin engaged in the conversation, and perhaps we can get this settled. And if my understanding of how the numbers read and Mr. Martin's understanding are correct based on past experience and we can move forward, it would be a simple blanket movement on Friday to get these going. And if our actuary's understanding creates some problems, then we're going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to address it. So I'll report back on Friday.
Okay, that's great. And could those from the various local hospitals make sure Ms. Vanek has your card and vice versa so that you can be in conversations? Senator Dill, I'll just tell the commission that your folks might be interested in the staying in PERA if that's the other option that might work for them under this circumstance. So let's just see how these all play out here for a second, and we want to accomplish what works for these various communities.
What it boils down to is the Hutchinson Hospital Administrator is nodding his head up and down as the Westfield Hospital Administrator is speaking, so they're the same. They want the same thing.
Yep.
Okay. If we can do it with the augmentation, that would work great. Otherwise, they might want to consider just staying in PERA general. So we'll Ms. Vanek and staff will do some work. All of you, all the local hospitals, make sure you leave your cards with Ms. Vanek and our staff. So Friday at
8 o'clock.
This room.
And our future.
We'll go a couple hours. What do you want to do? 2 or 3 hours on Friday?
Three.
We
got 2. 7 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
We've got three committees at the same time right
there. Right. Country guys aren't used to getting up early.
We'll figure out a way to.
Yeah. I'll come here first.
5 o'clock.
So it looks like we'll do 3 hours on Friday.
Okay.
3 hours. 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock.
6 o'clock, huh?
Meeting adjourned.
Sets to start them early.